The Flatus Show is brought to you by Douglas Brothers Apple Pectin Pea Powder Organic Soap, cleansing and rejuvenating hands and faces since 1923.
This podcast is a proud member of the Network of One Podcast. And also the Freak Network at thefreaknetwork.com.
On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 141, Saucers, Head, Shelley Winters, and Hope. All of this and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Welcome to the Flatus Show, kids. I'm Kenty, your host, and Jose, my co-host, is actually up and about. He's looking out the studio door into the kitchen, no doubt looking for a biscuit. Welcome to another week of the Flatus Show. I hope I'm not peeking too much here. I have a new... a new thing to amplify my voice for my record into the computer. I got rid of the TAC tape deck, which was taking up too much space, and the new little machine here is about the size of four decks of cards. Welcome to the Flatus Show. This week will be a good podcast for you. Let me get my notes here. First off, I want to thank people, listeners who have left comments at the blogspot.com, theflatusshow.blogspot.com. I want to especially thank Joe in Montana, manhandled in Montana. We have links for him. Thank you, Joe, for leaving the comment, and thanks for listening. I appreciate it. That's for you, Joe. And everybody else, okay, who's left comments on the blog. In fact, if you want to, if that's easier for you, just leave comments at The Flatus Show. TheFlatusShow.blogspot.com. You can leave comments. Or you can email at FlatusShow@gmail.com. Doesn't make a difference. If you think other people would be interested in reading what you have to say, or if you have links, maybe you ought to make a comment at the blog to put that stuff in there, because then everybody can see it, and it won't just be from my own eyes. Also, something new on the website is when I started working out at the gym, I had found a book at the dump. I find all my books at the dump now. Jose, sit down. Jose, he's getting it. Hold on, he's in wires. That's what you have with a dog. A dog who's losing his mind. So anyway, this book, Muscle Building for Beginners. And I've read through this many times. And this is what I followed when I started my exercise course. My course in exercising. So what I did is, they have a little chart in here for a free exercise course, a barbell course, dumbbell course. And I translated that. It's now a PDF file for my listeners to take if they want to start exercising. It'll give them a good start. There are other things to consider, which I'll be adding to the PDF file. Right now, all you have is the exercise course, okay? I'm going to be adding in descriptions of the exercises and also the diet that they describe in here, which I think is sensible. You know, I might actually podcast part of this. And there's also another workout, which I'm going to add in there, more advanced workouts. That's part two of the book. But, you know, what's really interesting, even though this book is, you know, 40 years old, the basics are the same today, whether they were then. You know, if you are if you're bodybuilding, the important thing is to get good nutrition and to exercise regularly and to make sure that you're lifting, you know, heavier each time, you know, that you're progressing. And so that's basically basics, okay? That's basics. Progressive resistance training and proper sleep and proper nutrition. Okay. So you kids can download the PDF to start with. I'm going to be adding more to it, so there'll be other versions, and I'll let you know when I update that. I was also at the dump the other day, and I found another cookbook, which is a pretty good cookbook. And usually don't pick up these cookbooks, but I did this one because I flipped through it and had some really great recipes. But Southern Living is a magazine, and they put out our best recipes type books occasionally. Well, this is from 1970, and it's a second printing from 1971. And so it's the favorite recipes from that magazine at that time. And it's a pretty, you know, if you can find a used copy of it, if you can find this book, I recommend it. They have really interesting appetizers, cakes. I'm trying to find, here's asparagus sandwiches. I never heard of anything, but I guess they'd make a good sandwich. Asparagus would make a good sandwich, you know. All sorts of things. Now, last week I was talking about Wonder Cake, and I made it, and it turned out really good. Did I tell you that? I don't know if I told you. I forget, but the Wonder Cake is wonderful. This week, I made Wonder Cake again, but I didn't make it with the chocolate. I wanted to make another flavor besides chocolate to see if it would work. Now, Wonder Cake is basically eggless and milkless cake, okay? So it's, if you have egg allergy or milk allergy, Wonder Cake is for you. Wheat allergies, forget it, because, you know, you can't really have cake if you have a wheat allergy. But, yeah. So I made a Wonder Cake with orange-flavored Wonder Cake, and it came out pretty good. Not as good as the chocolate cake, but not bad either. In fact, I'm going to go have a slice of that right now. Talking about it makes me hungry. Hold on. Okay, so I had my Wonder Cake. Yeah, so Wonder Cake. It's a wonder. It's even better the second day. The orange one is not as bad. Yesterday when I tasted it for the first time, I thought, oh, it's okay. But the day it has to sit a day. And it's really good. And, of course, I used my 7-minute miracle frosting, which is really easy to do and wonderful. But I've only done it with dried egg whites, not fresh egg whites. So I can't vouch for that if you use it with – make a 7-minute frosting with raw egg whites. I think I remember making them once with the real egg whites, and what happened was it didn't stay stiff like a frosting. It became like a marshmallow fluff, which was not very good. It was disgusting. So there we have it. Now let's get on with the phone calls.
Hi, Kenzie. It's Calvin. Just calling my favorite voice comment bottom. I was thinking maybe there should be a hanky for that, you know. Maybe like those old, you know, answering machine tapes sort of ripped out and have the tape hanging out on the right side, be a voice comment bottom. Calling about episode number 140, Thank you, Aunt Betty. Oh, the bad thing I found out about the law, Sarah, is apparently you don't have the right to refuse your husband to take more wives if he really wants to. Sorry about that. But then again, I was listening to the Big Gay Sex Show, and they were saying that you have got action on the side. So you've been totally holding out. And as for, like, talking about your parents and saying, like, I don't want to bitch or complain or whatnot, I don't think there's anything wrong with talking about, you know, crappy experiences that one had. You know, I think, you know, everybody's parents are going to, you know, fall short in some aspect. And I don't think there's anything wrong with processing that. I think it's healthy. I think it's a good thing. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I certainly don't have a share of bitching about my parents. I guess I don't know if I've done it too much on my show anymore, but I guess I bitch about my family. Oh, Jesus. What else? Oh, and I still like, you know, Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens. You know, they don't really disturb me that much. Part of it is that they aren't running around, you know. They're still not advocating that people shouldn't be able to live certain sort of lifestyles. They're just saying, they just don't like how people are, according to them, poisoned by religion. And I don't think there's anything wrong with sort of a healthy debate. I feel like it tends more to a dialectic. I think the problem is, if it were so imbued, oh no, a giant cat. What are those called with the big things in the front? Anyway, so I'm actually standing right next to a middle school in the playground, but there's no one out, so I feel a little lurid because I'm wearing some sort of strange Smurf t-shirt that has some grumpy mooning someone. It always makes me feel like a child molester. But anyway, I'm just doing laundry. So, yeah. But I did enjoy the show. I think you might be being a little hypersensitive about the whole parents thing and the Mother's Day thing. And, I don't know. It's always good to hear about your workout things. And it's not that, I don't know, sometimes I just get overwhelmed with the options. I certainly don't do 8 exercises per muscle because I'm not one of those people who's going to live at the gym. And I totally agree with you about, like, the steroid bodies thing. The problem is, at least for where I live, is that it looks very achievable in a way because you see all these people who do have those sort of bodies and walking around with these giant muscles. But they are pretty much all chemically enhanced. But, you know, at least for when I first moved here, I was like, how do all these people do this? How can they, you know, achieve this? But just because you don't see them shooting up doesn't mean they aren't. Anyway, really enjoyed the show. Thanks. Give my best to Jose and to Ranger John.
Okay, Calvin, thank you. You know, I've been listening to Calvin's podcasts, his earlier ones, and it all happened by mistake because his latest podcast, when I downloaded it on my computer, it Jose, what are you doing? It didn't download the whole time, so I had to, like, unsubscribe and resubscribe to get it. And so all the other ones started coming over. And I was like, so I went to the gym, you know, and I resubscribed. And when I came out, all of them were downloaded on my computer. So I was listening to them, and they're really good. The early ones are really good. He talks about being a Mormon and a missionary. So if you're interested in learning more about Calvin, download his podcast, his very earliest episodes. They're very good. So thank you, Calvin. So I didn't make any comments today on your phone call, but I think that the phone calls are not just for me because I did listen to it. They're for you as the listener too to talk amongst yourselves. So, you know, Calvin calls in. He's not just calling me, he's calling you too. So call me at 206-339-4617. I think that's the number. And leave me your voice comment if you want to be on the show, like Calvin. And I really appreciate it because I am a voice comment bottom. Another thing I want to add is with the exercise. Now, I have the exercise program, the PDF you can download, which, you know, I'm going to have more information on there, so you might want to hold off. But if you're really itching to see something or look at a program, you know, check it out. I found Frank Zane. Now, Frank Zane was a 3-time Olympia winner. I talked about Mr. Olympia winner. I think he's really hot. He was really hot, and he's still hot. I want to be that healthy and that strong when I'm, you know, 65. He has a website, and so I bought some of his discs, his CDs. They're motivational, meditative, trance, you know, CDs. Very, very relaxing and great. They're I can't recommend them highly enough for it. So if you need motivation, go to Frank Zane, order his CDs, and he has a whole bunch of them. But I bought his books, too. I went in and actually bought his books, and what else was it that I bought? And his DVD, where he shows how to do the exercises. So Frank Zane, he's the man. Now, I know Daniel and John make fun of me because of that, but I don't care. So anyway, on with the show.
Save for rainy days, she saves, but every time it rains, she spends what she puts away. She knows her proverbs, A to Z, and knows the good they bring.
But when she has to follow them,
well, that's another thing. Oh, little Audrey says, while the sun is out, make hay. Though she's not immense, there's a lot of sense in what little Audrey has.
One day, little Audrey and her papa were in Baghdad when all of a sudden Taliban insurgents kidnapped them. They went back to their lair and the Taliban insurgents said, "We're going to film you and you're going to ask your country to stop supporting Israel or we'll cut off your head on live television in 1 week." So a week went by and the U.S. government did not do anything. So the Taliban insurgents set up a video and placed little Audrey's papa in front of the camera and chopped off his head. After this was done, little Audrey just laughed and laughed and laughed because all the time she knew her papa loved to give head.
There's got to be a morning after. Well, we all know that is the theme to the Poseidon Adventure. And I was thinking, kids, about the Poseidon Adventure today, how it really is a sort of Unitarian, secular humanist myth or story, maybe. If you notice in the Poseidon Adventure, right? And I was thinking about this in relation to Chris Hedges, reading him about how, you know, science doesn't – the science in itself is not a great hope or not. It's how people use science, right? So, I mean, science can produce technology which will, you know, could destroy the Earth or not. I mean, it can be used for good or for bad, okay? It's neither – it's not moral. Science is not moral. And religion is not moral either. I mean, religion is dogma in many cases. And though, like for example, the Ten Commandments are is good practice. I mean, not to murder each other. It is dogma. There's no the only reason why if somebody just follows us on faith, there's no reason. Whereas there's a Unitarian and the secular humanist who look at these things a little bit more, a little in a different bent, I'll say. And I'm not going to say scientifically because, again, science is science. And I have something to read from the Atlantic Monthly or whatever, Atlantic Magazine. Now, we have the Poseidon Adventure. We have a group of people riding this big boat. It goes down, and then you gather into these groups. Notice how the group that actually survives, they they are doing things on their own. They're figuring it out by themselves. They're figuring out how to get out of the boat. Okay. They're using their skills to get out, and which they finally do, you know. And they use the smarts to figure out which end of the boat they're at. Halfway through the movie, while they're going through the boat, they come across another group of survivors, followed by a priest or a minister, somebody who is of the Christian faith. And they're going in the totally wrong direction. And yet you have all these people following this guy, you know. Do they survive? We don't know, because the movie doesn't show them surviving, you know. But, you know, they're going into the fog, right? And we have our heroes doing what seems to be going in the wrong direction. They're actually going in the right direction because they know. They know how to look for signs in the ship. They know how to read. They know how to reason, okay? And just because you can reason, right? Okay, we talk about science and faith and stuff. Reason is beyond science and faith too. I think reason is a third thing. To be a reasonable person doesn't mean you're necessarily scientific, and it doesn't mean you're religious. Reason is reason. You take a fact and you make a decision, right? And as all like leaders know, right? I'll just say that, you know, I'm a leader of the podcast here, my podcast, and the Gay Agenda. As a leader of the Gay Agenda, you make a decision and you stick with it, right? And that is the way it goes, you know. You have to make a decision. You know, I mean, that's what it is. Reason, that's what it is. You make a decision and you go with it. Now, you could say the religious people were reasonable too. They made a decision and they went with it in the movie, right? Of course, they were wrong because they went to their death. But then there's reason, which our heroes in the movie use, because they're looking for reality. They're looking at reality. They're seeing the situation. And they're figuring out the best way to get out, which they do. I was thinking about it being a little Zionist, because we have Shelley Winters and her husband, who they want to get to Israel, right? But Shelley Winters, I realized this, is that Shelley Winters, she was, her character played this woman who was a famous swimmer, who was a really popular swimmer, right? And what happened was is that she, in order to save the people, she went and swam underwater. She eventually, it killed her because she was, you know, not very healthy. But as she's dying, I think she said she gave a medal to her husband to give to her grandchildren in Israel. And I believe that that medal was the medal she got for swimming, right? I don't think it was a religious icon. But if any of my listeners have recently watched the original Poseidon Adventure, please let me know what it was that Shelley Winters gave her husband to give to her children in Israel. Because they talk about going to Israel the whole time. And I was thinking, well, maybe it's a Zionist movie. But it's really not. It's about secular humanism. It's about reason. It's about people using reason, okay? And I don't say science, okay? Because science is a tool. Perhaps a tool of reason. But it's a tool, nevertheless. Okay. Because I think it's reasonable to believe that that there's a God, right? You can't be scientifically proven. It's not a scientific... You can't scientifically prove it. I mean, there's no way of proving it or disproving it. And that's it. I mean, it's a matter of faith, right? Which is fine with me, because I believe that there's mysteries in the universe which the humans will never know, regardless of how far science takes us, you know, figuring things out. I think it's built into our brains. We're part of the system. We can't necessarily know what's outside of the system, you know. We're limited by our three dimensions, you know. Our brains are limited. So I believe in mysteries. I have experienced them. You know, I've seen them happen. Mysteries beyond explanation, and you know, what, you know, and I have to just take it at that, you know, it's a mystery, you know, and I accept it, you know, I accept the mystery. I like that part of Catholicism, but everything else about Catholicism I hate. I mean, I'm not Catholic bashing, but Catholics, you know, when they're in a political group, there's a lot of Catholics in Massachusetts. When they try to, like, stop gay marriage, they're really nasty. These fundamentalist Catholics are nasty, nasty people. And in, like, law, all the, you know, the Pope and everything, oh, I can't stand them. The Catholic Church, I have nothing against individual Catholics, okay? So if you're Catholic out there, you know, whatever, okay? Have fun being a Catholic. But personally, it's, you know, as a group, Catholics have a lot to, whatever. Listen to me. If it's not Mormons I'm talking about, or Seventh-day Adventists, it's Catholics, or the fundamentalists. Aren't I terrible? Unitarians are only the best. You have to become a Unitarian. So yeah, that's, or Scientologists. I'm against Scientology too. But Unitarians are reasonable. Why can't everybody see that? Fascism, fascism, fascism. But hold on, let me go get something here from the Atlantic Monthly or whatever it is. There's an article, and I have links on my webpage. It's Templeton. It's the Atlantic. John Templeton Foundation has asked, this is a third in a series of conversations among leading scientists and scholars about the big questions. And it's about, the question is, does science make belief in God obsolete? And I have a link on my show notes saying belief, and it has various, scholars and scientists talking about this. Now, this one guy is really interesting. His name is Robert Sapolsky, and he is at Stanford. Now, I like what he has to say. I'm going to read this. He says no. Okay, his answer basically is no. Does science make belief in God obsolete? No. Despite the fact that I'm an atheist, I recognize that belief offers something that science does not. Science isn't remotely about scientists announcing truths or the truth. It's about stating things with a certain degree of certainty. A scientist will say, in this experiment, I observed that A causes B. It didn't happen every single time, and my statistical analysis show that I can be X percent certain that this A-B connection didn't happen by chance. The convention in most scientific papers is that you don't report something until you're more than 95% certain. It is impossible with statistics to state something with 100% certainty. Now, I'm not trying to be a postmodernist gibbering about how science is a purely subjective process and there is no objective truths. There are truths, and scientific knowledge produces temporary points of solid ground in pursuit of them. An observation must have predictive power and be capable of independent replication by others. And scientists must be willing to abandon supposed knowledge when a completely different explanation arises. Now, that it is continued online. I didn't read the whole thing online, but I do want to go online and read it. But it's templeton.org/belief. And I have, of course, I have links in my page. So I think it's really interesting, you know, the Poseidon Adventure a parable for your Unitarians and secular humanists. Okay.
Something familiar, something peculiar, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Something appealing, something appalling, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Nothing with kings, nothing with crowns. Bring on the lovers, liars, and clowns. Old situations, new complications. Nothing pretentious or polite. Tragedy tomorrow, comedy tonight. Something convulsive, something repulsive, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Something aesthetic, something frenetic, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Nothing of gods, nothing of fate. Weighty affairs will just have to wait. Nothing that's formal, nothing that's normal. No recitations to recite. Open up the curtain. Comedy tonight.
Hope. Last night I went to the Rockport High School and saw the production that they put on this year, which was Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, which I'll refer to as Forum, is a musical by Stephen Sondheim. It was his first musical where he composed the music and wrote the lyrics. So anyway, these kids at the high school did a really fantastic job. Let me tell you, talented. Let me compare this, though, because it's remarkable. You'd have to have been here to see what it was like 6 years ago. When John and I moved to Rockport, we came up to the high school to see their musical. And hold on. Jose's howling. High school. We came up here to the high school. I have Jose with me because he doesn't howl. We went to see South Pacific. They did South Pacific. Now, this production of South Pacific was pretty bad. I mean, first off, it surprised me that the high school would choose to do such a difficult musical. And the reason why it's difficult, I mean, the music is difficult. Some of the tessitura, I mean, some of the ranges were outside, the music was outside the range of these kids. And plus, it's awful dark. I mean, it's deep and dark themes, okay? Racism and all sorts of things. The fact is they did a pretty good job with the acting part. It was the musical part. It was pretty bad. And there was, you know, that's not a musical where there's any kind of dancing and singing, swinging, and flinging. Where the funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, I did say I was going to call it Forum from now on out, is a singing, swinging, and flinging musical, and these kids got into it. It was a big cast. I mean, they must have had 20 kids, you know, plus an adult was in there on the stage. And the orchestra was very good, too. Previously, it was a piano, a bass guitar, drums, and I think that's about it. Maybe a clarinet. And with this time, the conductor, the music teacher, she played piano. She played an electric piano, so she could change it to harpsichord or harp or whatever. And there were, I don't know, two or three clarinets, a flute, one cello. There was trumpets, trombone. There was a bass guitar for the bass and drums. They did a really fine job with the arrangement, with getting it, you know, doing the arrangements. So good for them, right? So little Jose, don't cry, honey. So what the thing is that this year these kids were smiling. These kids did a really fine job. Even 6 years ago, they did a good job with the pacing because it's hard to get the pace of a play right. I mean, to get it in within, to have it done within a certain period of time, to have the right pace. One thing I have to commend all the Rockport productions I've seen is the pace is good, regardless of whether they can sing or not. They got the pace down. These kids had it all down. They had the music. The lead singer, he was like a male Ethel Merman. Every time he sang, there was interference with their sound system. The other kids who could you know, Hummets who could sing a tune, they sang at a level that, you know, the mics picked them up right. This guy, he didn't need a mic. He was singing, swinging, and flinging. He needed a professional, you know, musical theater mic. What was I going to say now about that? So the pace was good, okay? See, this is the second time I've done this, honeys, okay? The first time I recorded this, I thought it was taking a long time because I was talking and, you know, talking. I'm looking at the time to see what, you know, try to keep these segments at a certain length. And so I'm looking and I'm thinking, oh my God, I've only recorded 4 minutes. And so I go on and go on and I'm talking and talking and talking. I'm like, how long have I recorded now? Seems like I've recorded it for 10 minutes. What do you mean I've only recorded for 6 minutes? I'm yawning. So anyway, I think it's a good sign. I think it's a good sign. I think it's a good sign. It's a sign of hope. I think it's these kids are going to bring hope for the future. I mean, these kids are going to be able to vote this year, right? 18, they can vote. They're going to bring, if anything happens, they're going to bring in Obama. And I really think Obama has youth on his side. McCain does not have the youth on his side. And I don't think Hillary Clinton has youth on her side. And I think it's the youth which are going to make changes in Washington, you know, because they're tired of, they know they can do it. They have the power. And it's a little scary because, you know, I don't know about you, but I mean, I hate it. I hate to see it when you are a business, right? And they hire somebody who's like 13 to be the assistant vice president of whatever. You know, they're younger than you. And I don't understand it, tell you the truth. I mean, the people have no experience or little experience. And they're hired to do these big jobs. When I was working at the music store, the example is the CEO was a guy like a year younger than me. I was, I don't know, 28 at the time, 29. He's 27. He's the CEO. He's the head of the Wall Music. I mean, what the hell? I don't understand how they can put people like that in those kind of positions, you know? I don't know about you, but I mean, so that bothers me with youth is an unknown, you know. I guess people do what they have to do, right? They'll do what they have to do. But anyway, I think it's a good sign. So go to your high schools and look at the musicals. Hold on. Get something right here. What is this? Oh, yeah, okay. I see who it is. Okay. Go to your high school, see the musicals, and let me know what you think. Are they really good this year compared to the previous years? Is there a lot of hope in these kids? If there is, it's a good sign for the future, I think. Right? I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? So, well, Jose and I are just sitting here. When I recorded this segment the first time, I talked about how I was involved with musical theater back in Pennsylvania. And I did MAME. I was in MAME. I was in the chorus. I did the chorus. I was in MAME. I was in Kismet. What else was I in? Chicago. Yeah, it was Chicago. This is in 1988-89. Way before the revival of Chicago. Our music theater decided to put it on because the guy who was directing it loved the show. And it was hard to find any kind of, what do you call it, music for it. I mean, the LP and whatever was long out of print from the original run. But we did it. I learned it. I had learned it all fresh and new. It was really fun. It was really fun. It was a great experience learning something brand new, like you never heard before. With MAME, when I did MAME, you know, we could model it off the movie or whatever. I knew what was going on. With Chicago, I didn't know anything. It was a brand new experience. It was very good. So yeah, these kids, go see your high school musicals and support the drama kids. Support those kids in the drama club because they need your help and to put on good shows. Okay.
Tune in, wouldn't it be something? Rumor spreading into panic. I've seen movement in the clearing. Someone sent you something satanic. I have to leave you, radar's calling. Outside somebody has landed. Crazy wavelengths leave you helpless. Oh, don't forget me, I'm so stranded. I wouldn't fool you, but I've seen the saucers so many times I'm almost in tune. Watching them flying in formation, thinking how I could be so immune. I've seen them, I've been there with them. I can tell you all you want to know. Something touched me and I was only sleeping. Wouldn't you lie to go? Stars climbing into their planets, systems one controlled from birth, empty living on this highway. Can you see me, Mother Earth? It's so endless, whirling onwards. Wonder what's cooking at home tonight. Maybe if I promise not to say a word, they can get me back before morning light. I wouldn't fool you, but I've seen the saucers so many times I'm almost in tune. Watching them flying in formation, thinking how I could be so immune. I've seen them, I've been there with them. I can tell you all you want to know. Something touched me and I was only sleeping. Wouldn't you like to go?
Goodreads, and what it has brought out in me. Okay, so the other day, I got an email from Trevor Carpenter, my fundamentalist friend, also a listener of the Two Guys, One Brain. I don't think he listens to my show, but if you do, Trevor, hi, I still want to interview you. He had signed up for Goodreads, and he sent me a link saying, you know, do you want to be my friend? So I clicked the link, clinked it, and signed up. And it said to me, I mean, it presented this, I signed up, and then Goodreads presented this thing for me. And it said, do you want to notify your friends on Gmail or whatever, you know, email thing you're using, to about Goodreads, you know, find out what they're thinking. So I said, yeah, sure, why not? And I'm thinking, okay, you know, it's going to have people that I contact regularly. I figured Gmail you know, put in my address book people I contact regularly, not every little, you know, fart, you know. So I click it, and it's like, I'm sending 91 invitations. Like, fuck, 91 conversations. 91, right? So I send out 91 things. So if you received it, if you're listening to this show and you received it and you didn't like it, I'm sorry. Sorry, I'll never do that again. However, many people did sign up, and I got to see what they got to read. So I want to thank everybody who did that, because now I have friends and good reads, and I like it, because I was like, yeah. It's like, find out what people are reading. Now, personally, I used to read all the time. This is BP, before podcasting. I used to do a lot before podcasting. But I used to read books, actual books, all the time. And so when I got on the Goodreads, I must have spent 3 hours thinking up, trying to remember all the books I read. Because I still have books. I'm looking at – see, actually, it's something I want to talk to you about. I want to go through all of my books and my records and stuff. And I think I need to start thinning things out to make it more manageable. I need to get rid of, I think, like one-third of all of my objects here, or more. One-third or more of my things, of my objects to objects, I call them, to just clear things out. I mean, I keep things, and I have a romantic notion I'll get to them, and I probably will never get to them. It's like Strauss operas, which I'll probably never listen to. But really, it's funny thing about Strauss operas, to not get off too far off the topic, I never thought I'd listen to another Strauss opera after Salome, or what was it? Salome and Ariadne off Naxos. Okay, they're the two. It's like, or and Electra. Those three. I was like, okay, those three are the only Strauss operas, Richard Strauss operas, that I'm going to listen to. I just don't have enough time for Arabella, right? As it turns out, when I started listening to the Metropolitan Opera broadcast and started recording them, right, and trading. The first one I recorded was Arabella with Renee Fleming, right? It was a big thing, Renee Fleming's first Arabella or second Arabella. Maybe she did it first in Dallas. But anyway, it was Arabella, it was Renee Fleming, and I was recording it. Now, this is one reason why how I became much more involved in opera was when I started listening to the Metropolitan Opera, listening to opera on radio, like live broadcasts, and was recording them, I was listening to them very carefully because I wanted to make sure I got a good recording, and I was just more attentive to this, what was actually going on. As it turns out, I love Arabella, and so life's not too short for Arabella. So, you know, maybe I will read, what's that book? I can't even think of it, like the Proust books. Maybe I'll read Proust someday. I think life's probably too short for Proust, but, you know, who knows? You know, maybe I'll read it. Maybe I'll be able to read Proust. So I'd like to start reading again. But anyway, now I get back to Goodreads about reading, with reading in my books. So I start filling out my my Goodreads, all the books I've read. And believe me, I've read a lot more books than what I have listed on there. I think I've filled in like 200 books. But I thought a lot of them were like these childhood books I read, you know? And what started me is because Matthew from Spanking B. Arthur, he put in that he had read the Little House on the Prairie books. And I did too, you know? And I thought, oh, yeah, I read Lois Lowry. I read this. Amelia Bedelia and da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, I was trying to find them. Not all of them are listed in there. But I listed anything that came to mind that I could remember the plot and really, you know, affected my life the way I, you know, like really was a great book, you know? And I think there's a lot of children's literature like that. That is really great literature, you know, is well written, like the Madeline L. Engel, Wrinkle in Time. But what I wanted to talk to you about was the stuff I was reading in college. And I was, you know, when I was in college, like I was saying before, I was studying and stuff, but I had a group of friends and we were really involved. Now, when I say the paranormal, it's not really the paranormal, but we were interested in what is we were interested in questioning things like, hold on, let me get some water. Questioning what is psychic powers? Like, what is this? What can you do? How could you even test anything like that? We were interested in parapsychology and the mystical things and Gnosticism and UFOs and stuff like that. Because a friend of mine was really into UFOs. She claimed to have seen one and been abducted by aliens. So I, was involved with that. Now, you know, on hindsight, did I waste my life reading all this stuff, paranormal stuff? I don't think so. But I also know from my experience that being involved with the New Age stuff, and I never really was that involved. I never was an alkalite or whatever. And I knew people who were just like, they're like the fundamentalist Christians, you know. They're so into it. They believe it. They have crystals. I never got into it like that. I always thought it was kind of foolish. But I think to myself, did I waste my time? And I don't think I did. I think what I learned was a way of looking at reality with a sense of mystery, right? So, and like I said, I always believed in God, right? But I never believed in devils, for example, and I still don't believe in devils or angels, for that matter. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying right now. But I wanted to talk about the UFOs and stuff like that. Now, I think I talked about this before. Is John and I actually saw an unidentified flying object. We were in the Fenway. And we were taking the dogs out for a walk. It was winter time. It was like February. And I guess this is like 2001 maybe. It was like after the 401k thing. No, the 2-1-K, 2K thing. 2KO or whatever. It was after that. And we were walking over in the Fenway with the dogs. And I look up and I see there's this star. It looked like a star, like moving back and forth, zigzag, right? Next thing you know, there are other ones. And they're like in a circle, going around in a circle, right? This is like looking out over like the harbor in Boston, if you're looking in that direction from the Fenway. Like over the museum. And I said to John, what do you see out there? And he told me what he saw. The same thing I was seeing. Because I was thinking, I was seeing an illusion or whatever, you know. But they did. They went around in the circle. And then they shot off in the different directions. It's like, what could it have been? I don't know what it was. But it was weird, right? And then on the way home, because I was really into coincidences and stuff like this. And I'm not so much anymore because you can really go crazy thinking about that. But, I mean, I do recognize a coincidence when I see it. But I'm I don't think about it. It's not on the tip of my tongue the whole time. So I'm not thinking about it the whole time. Because, you can go crazy thinking about it. Everything's a coincidence. You know, everything's not a coincidence. Everything is, put there for a reason. On the way home, in the sidewalk, there is a book called How Real is Real. I thought that was really insane, Really crazy, let me tell you. I saw flying saucers.
Another 5-minute mystery. Thank you.
a big case we're headed for, Inspector.
Well, you're right in a way, Stokes. I've known old Sherry, the man who's been murdered, for a long time.
Isn't he the guy who owned a lot of diamonds?
Yes, he had several very valuable ones in his collection. And I think somebody killed Sherry for those diamonds.
Any idea who?
We'll find that out after we get inside.
Hello, Inspector Crothers. I'm glad you got here so soon.
Oh, hello, Dr. Matthews. I brought Sergeant Stokes along to help.
Fine. Come on in, won't you? The man who phoned me, Mr. Sayers, is in the study where they found Sherry.
We'll come along after you, Doctor.
Inspector Crothers, this is Mr. Sayers who found Mr. Sherry unconscious when he came in.
How do you do, Mr. Sayers?
Holy Moses, look at this place. Looks as though a cyclone had struck it.
Now, tell us what happened, won't you, Mr. Sayers? I'd like to get the story straight.
Well, in a very confidential capacity, I represent a large diamond-buying syndicate. Mr. Sherry was known to have a very extensive collection of gems, one specimen in particular that our firm wanted to buy.
And you were sent to see if he would sell it?
That's right. I made an appointment with Mr. Sherry for this evening. He said to come here and that he might be back here in the study and not hear the bell. If no one answered, I was to come right in. He would leave the door unlocked for me.
Isn't that a rather strange thing for a man to do who has a valuable collection of diamonds in his house?
Well, I thought so at the time, but I thought also that Mr. Sherry was perhaps, well, eccentric. You see, I'd never met him, nor, as a matter of fact, heard of him until yesterday. I come from another part of the country, you see.
And he was alone?
Completely. You can imagine how shocked I was at finding Mr. Sherry lying on the floor by the desk, unconscious and the room all upset.
When Mr. Sayers phoned me, I imagined that Sherry was suffering from one of his chronic attacks. However, I find that the man has been hit at the base of the skull by a powerful blow, breaking his neck and killing him instantly.
You say you are familiar with Mr. Sherry's chronic attacks, Doctor?
Yes, I've been Mr. Sherry's personal physician for many years.
That was why I phoned Dr. Matthews, Inspector. I knew that he would be able to offer the best help.
Mr. Sayers, your theory is a very nicely calculated one. In fact, I would have acted on it if it hadn't been for one thing. As it is, though, I'm holding you for the murder of Mr. Sherry and for the attempted theft of his diamond collection.
What mistake did Sayers make that caused the inspector to hold him on a definite charge of murder? In just a moment, we'll tell you, but first... Now, back to our five-minute mystery.
Hold me for murder? Why, Inspector, I told you...
I know, Mr. Sayers, you told me a little too much. When you said you had never met Sherry, nor heard of him until a day ago, everything was fine. But when you said you called his personal physician purposely, you caught yourself. If you knew nothing about Sherry, you couldn't have known who his personal physician was.
Say, Inspector, that's pretty clever. Pretty clever.
Henry W. Longfellow, The Open Window. The old house by the linden stood silent in the shade, and on the graveled pathway the light and shadow played. I saw the nursery windows wide open to the air, but the faces of the children, they were no longer there. The large Newfoundland house dog was standing by the door. He looked for his little playmates who would return no more. They walked not under the lindens, they played not in the hall, but shadow and silence and sadness were hanging over all. The birds sang in the branches with sweet familiar tone, But the voices of the children will be heard in dreams alone. And the boy that walked beside me, he could not understand why closer in mine, ah, closer, I pressed his warm, soft hand.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
I've seen them, I've been there with them, I can tell you all you want to know.